Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today we're excited to welcome Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph P. Farrell back to the show. Now, Dr. Farrell has been tracking geopolitics regularly at his website, GizaDeathStar.com. In this special episode, we're going to have him weigh in on the volatile 2016 U.S. presidential election. Now, Dr. Farrell has referred to this election as the most bizarre of his lifetime. And today I'm going to ask him how his book, The Third Way, with its examination of McCarthyism and the rise of the Kennedys, is related to the deep state forces operating behind the scenes in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Is there a direct political link reaching back 50 years through the present? Here we go, Dr. Joseph Farrell, Deep State Election 2016.
I think that there is something going on here. The trouble is, every time people try to connect all these dots with each other, they end up dead. It's like the body count around the Clintons, you know. If they're reading the same tea leaves, they're thinking, oh my word, we've exposed ourselves now so much in the way we're handling, you know, Trump and all of this business. We've got to go for broke. And that's kind of scary.
You know, we can always observe the hidden hand of the deep state in American politics during the presidential elections. In 1960, John F. Kennedy shocked the ruling power elite by defeating their champion, Richard Nixon. Kennedy was then removed by the deep state in a high-stakes gambit of assassination. The deep state attempted again in 1981 to interfere with the presidency when covert forces tried to remove President Reagan in an assassination attempt to install George Bush. But when they failed, they realized they had to work through more subtle means. Now, the deep state has a long history of being at war with the public state, but this year, with Trump versus Clinton, it is apparently at war with itself. Now, it behooves us to ask what the ramifications of this will be. Let's go ask Dr. Joseph P. Farrell.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
Internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special summer discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, hello everyone. I'm definitely excited to talk about this election today, which I think has so many interesting aspects. Of course, the media has really exposed themselves as being totally with Hillary, to the point where international observers can't believe their eyes. Now, regardless of where you stand or who your candidate is, the incredibly one-sided coverage in this election really is unmasking the agenda of the mainstream media, which is to keep that propaganda train moving and to keep these global trade deals intact. Now we're going to break it all down with Dr. Joseph Farrell, and a quick reminder here to sign up for our newsletter at darkjournalist.com so you don't miss any of the shows we have coming up for election season. Joseph, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we have a lot to get to with this 2016 presidential election coverage.
Yes.
But I wanted to start off with this, which, although apparently unrelated, is really in sync with this bizarre picture that we see forming in 2016. And that is this bizarre video of what is apparently a human sacrifice or a mock human sacrifice taking place at CERN, of all places.
Right.
Now, have you had a chance to view the footage?
I have seen it. If I remember correctly, that was part of the opening ceremonies. But this video I think you're talking about is something more recent.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's two different ones. One of them was an opening ceremony for the world's largest tunnel in Sweden,
right,
called the Goddard Base Tunnel, with a bizarre ceremony that looked like an occult ritual, basically. Really, it was like a Bergman movie.
Yeah.
Quite over the top. And then the one at CERN looked almost like security footage, and this was a mock human sacrifice video.
Right.
Now, strangely enough, CERN had to actually come out and make a statement about it and say, well, we don't know anything about a video like that or who would have made it, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So really an unusual situation there. So I guess my question is, what is behind this push to kind of have these black rituals out in the open where everyone can see it? You know, do they need to do a certain amount of this in public view or is something else happening?
My intuition all along, Daniel, has been that if you look at these ceremonies, another ceremony that I saw that I was appalled at was the ceremony that was held on the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Verdun in World War I. Chancellor Merkel and President Hollande went to Verdun to have, you know, a memorial service because, you know, that one battle alone killed approximately 400,000 Frenchmen, 400,000 Germans, you know, in a matter of months. Weeks, actually. And the ceremony was this bizarre pagan Luciferian thing. And I use that word advisedly because I think that's these people telling us who their ultimate master is. And I was just dumbstruck by the fact that you would honor dead Frenchmen who are fighting for France and, you know, Catholic, Christian, free France and dead Germans, you know, fighting for the Reich and their version of Christian civilization. Why would you honor those dead in that way with something so blatantly against what both sides were fighting for?
Mm-hmm.
I thought all along that the elites, the power elites, that there is a certain segment of them that have a deeply occult, black, satanic spirituality.
Right. So what kind of public revelations can we link some of this activity to? You know, what's a good focal point that we can correlate it with?
I think this is why you see the pedophilia scandals that keep popping up over and over again in this country, in the United Kingdom, in the Catholic Church. There's something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're connected. The trouble is, I do know that there are certain people who've tried to connect these things, and they end up dead.
Right.
There was back during the aftermath of the Franklin scandal in this country, Daniel. I don't know if you remember that, but in the aftermath of that, there were certain researchers that I can't remember their names, that investigated a thing called the Founders Foundation or something like this. And it turns out that this so-called foundation was doing nothing but going out and abducting children to use as sex slaves in the elite's games, you know, their sex games, their sacrifices, and so on and so forth. So what I think is going on, Daniel, is behind the mock sacrifices, there's a reality. And I think there's some sort of rule, to be quite honest with you, that they have to tell the world what they are about to do or going to do or are doing in some way or fashion in order for their agenda to go forward. I don't know how else to put it.
Well, that's very interesting, actually. I can really follow that. Now, do we have a good example in ancient doctrines that would sort of demonstrate this rule?
The book of Job, if you want to get right down to it, you know, you've got the devil going to God and saying, okay, well, let me do this. And God says, well, all right, but you have to kind of prepare, you know, let him know you're going to zap him with all sorts of junk. That's the impression I'm getting from all of this. We've seen such nuttiness, you know, they wanted to build a temple to Baal in New York City, you know. And from my standpoint, yeah, that's kind of appropriate, but you know, I'm a Midwesterner. These people on the coast, no offense, but anyway, I think that there is something going on here. The trouble is every time people try to connect all these dots with each other, they end up dead or all of a sudden decide that they need a new career in a different field of research. You know, it's very strange.
Suddenly they need a new career in a new town.
A new career in a new town.
Exactly. Yep. Now, I think Ted Gunderson is the researcher that comes to mind.
That's the name I was trying to think of.
Yes, great investigator.
That's the name I was trying to think of.
Yeah, and his research went really deep.
It went very deep, and lo and behold, all of a sudden he ends up dead. And, you know... he didn't strike me of a heart attack, if I remember correctly. And he did, you know, an FBI special agent is going to have government physicals as a part of their regular routine. They're not going to recruit somebody that's not in good physical condition. And he was, you know, an elderly gentleman, but he never struck me as being in particularly bad health.
Well, there's just no question that there's a pattern around certain investigative researchers having their efforts cut short. You know, Jim Keith is the guy that comes to mind right now, but his research around the Men in Black was way deeper and certainly more bizarre than anything that's out there in the more naive literature on the subject.
Yes.
Now, he certainly was a threat to that kind of covert wing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he goes in for, you know, outpatient knee surgery and ends up dead.
Yeah.
There's too many coincidental things like this that happen in this research community, particularly when you start investigating stuff like this. And, you know, I've looked into some of this and done a little research over the years on these sacrifice sex ring stories. And I'm convinced that they're connected, but part of me is cautious about going there, because if I do anything like that, I want to make sure that I have all the dots connected before I put anything out there. And Gunderson appeared to me like he was connecting, making deep connections with some of these stories that he was finding out about the founders. And then he ends up dead. It's like the body count around the Clintons, you know. How many messages do you have to send?
Definitely. And their body count is really going very high this year. And suddenly it's just rocketing off the charts.
It's unreal. It's unreal. And it's, you know, to me, it goes all the way back to Arkansas. It's that Bush-Clinton nexus again. That, you know, they're both corrupt up to the earlobes. And if nothing else, Daniel, I think what Trump is doing is he's thrown such a monkey wrench into the system that it has them genuinely panic, because what he's done is he's put all of this alternative media stuff that we've been researching and discussing for years, he's put it right into the mainstream, and it's not going to go away. And they know that.
Definitely true.
Whether he wins or loses, it's not going to go away.
Well, it's actually an amazing strategy when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had Roger Stone on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Talking about his LBJ book, about LBJ's involvement in the Kennedy assassination. And at the time, his Clinton expose books were just in development. You know, and I found it interesting that he was working on the books a few years before Trump ran for president.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stone became the advisor to Trump, and now they're battling the Clintons. You know, it's almost as if Trump understands the implications of the alternative research along the lines of what we're discussing here. and he's able to use them. But when he uses them publicly, it mainlines this powerful information.
Yes.
And the establishment has to run for cover or just make him look like he's so out there for bringing these things up in the first place.
Yeah. Well, you know, the trouble with trying to make him look like he's out there is people aren't buying it.
Right.
This is what I think has stunned them. And, you know, the way I'm looking at it, Daniel, even if he loses the race, and I have to be honest, I'm extremely skeptical of the polls that are showing Hillary ahead.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that's for her.
Right. Well, you see the events and, yeah. You know, when she shows up there, there's 20 people basically that show up to see her. And then when Trump does his rallies, you're pretty much filling Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. Where are they getting these numbers? You know, they've got monkeys in a room typing on typewriters coming up with, I don't know. But even if he loses, you know, what I think he's going to do, looking at the way the media has responded to this, I fully expect him to launch his own media enterprise. I really think that, you know, he'd pull something like that. You think I'm going to go away just because I lost? No, you know.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, either way, I think they're looking at a very different ball game than they bargained on at this stage.
Well, there's no question about it. And a lot of their facades have fallen away also.
Yep.
They've just been ruthless and completely non-objective in this election cycle. And, you know, we're talking about the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN. These are supposedly prestigious media organizations, and they just attack Trump and his followers like they did Bernie and his followers, and they just endlessly make apologies for Clinton. It's poor journalism, and it's more like state-controlled propaganda. You know, I kind of find that fascinating, that it's just so bold-faced, this favoritism. And that represents a shift, in my opinion, and we haven't really seen this shift before on this level. You know, I think it's a shift of fear.
Yeah, it is fear. And as a result of their shifting like this, they're not only losing their objectivity, but as far as I can tell, they're losing their readership, they're losing their listenership and viewers. In a certain sense, they're falling on their sword for Hillary Clinton. And in the long term, this does not benefit them. You know, they're falling again. They're falling into Trump's hands because, like I say, if he loses the election, he's got the money to launch a media network, which I fully expect he will do.
Oh yeah.
He's got the money. He's got the brain trust to do it. So they're cutting their own throats here. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Right. I agree with you.
There's no way to make sense of this.
Well, it's as if they've taken the last vestiges of trust that people had in their reporting.
Yep.
Now, the election is a dead heat. You know, they wanted a landslide for Hillary, and they've been protecting her in this race. Mm-hmm. But the mask is falling away, and mm-hmm. with the scandals at the Clinton Foundation, some serious violations, I think. Mm-hmm. And the average person is looking at this and thinking, the media is just lying at this point. Now, the establishment is very worried, and in order to cling to power, it seems to me they are drumming up division, mm-hmm. you know, looking for civil war
yep.
style
yep.
Kind of atmosphere. And this is something that they throw out there as a trial balloon once in a while and then pull it back, test it out here and there, and I'm sure they're gathering data to see if they can pull that kind of thing off. So division and that kind of extreme division is a card I think they're considering at this point.
Oh, yeah. They're floating lots of balloons right now vis-a-vis the Second Amendment. They're floating lots of balloons vis-a-vis, you know, the alternative media and how to deal with it. And the feedback that they're getting is just try it. You know, and the bad thing that they've got to take into account again, is where are all these hacks coming from? They're trying to blame the Russians. This isn't floating.
Uh-huh.
I think it's got to give them pause that if there's a segment of the American deep state that is that pissed off at what they have done and what they're up to and who's behind them, they've got to be thinking, oh my word, were exposed and now we're isolated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the George Soros Israeli thing. You know, you've got the Jerusalem Post now saying all these things about Soros, and they're not complimentary. You know, and it's a short telephone call from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv and the Mossad. So,
you know, right, yeah,
it's not long distance.
So, you know, so Soros has good reason to look over his shoulder. Right?
Good reason to look over his shoulder. You know, if you've got somebody in the NSA or whatever leaking all of his foundation emails, and they're writing about it in Israel, I'd be a little concerned.
You know? Yeah,
and the Russian. Banning his organization in Russia, I'd be concerned. And you know, and if you're Hillary Clinton and getting all the backing that she's getting from Soros and people like that, yeah, I'd be a little concerned if I were her too, you know?
right
It's just I have, Daniel, in all of my years, I've never seen politics this nutty.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was nutty with Johnson and Goldwater, you know?
I know. They seem tame by comparison.
They seem tame by comparison. This is nuts.
Well, there's something interesting going on in this election, and it goes back to something that you've said about a portion of the deep state attempting to expose Hillary, mm-hmm. you know, expose Soros, and also exposing the media. Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of years back, we had the whistleblower Edward Snowden revealing illegal surveillance of U.S. citizens by the NSA. And it's never been explained how one guy just happened to pull off, you know, revealing this much clandestine activity all by himself. So I have no doubt that he was part of a larger operation to get these things out. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he was sincere in wanting to reveal this, but there's a much wider organization somewhere that had to have supported his efforts.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think there's organization behind Julian Assange. I think there's organization behind Snowden. It may even be one and the same organization. The fact that Snowden went to Russia and Russia gave him asylum, that raises my suspicion meter into the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is an organization like that, I think it's just by the dynamics of what we've seen happen with those two and what we see happening now in the American political campaign. I think, first of all, the organization is international in character. In other words, it's not simply a reaction of a certain segment of the American deep state. I think it's a reaction of a certain segment within the globalization crowd that is not happy with, number one, the very dark agendas that the standard names, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, you know, they're not happy with the direction they see that old guard trying to move. They're not happy with the centralization part of it. They're not happy with all of this open borders stuff. They don't know what else to do.
Right.
Catherine Fitz and I, she was here visiting last night, and we talked a lot about this whole thing, and her take is kind of the same, that there's something going on here, and there's some pushback coming from within that community that is trying to get these dark influences, the Soroses, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, out of the picture and move it in a different direction. So I wouldn't be surprised that you have some sort of covert arrangement with the Russians, with the Israelis, with some of the European nations, trying to fight all of this. I go back to something very significant that is a clue in this regard, and that's the op-ed piece in The Economist last July, where The Economist, at the time, you remember, Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush were the front runners.
Right, they were on top.
So the op-ed piece in The Economist magazine, which we must remember, is first of all, it's a Rothschild mouthpiece. It's the mouthpiece for the British deep state, for the British oligarchy. And the op-ed piece was basically saying, you're running these guys again? Can't you come up with something new? Is your political class that calcified? You cannot do anything else? And so, in other words, they're telling us in that op-ed piece, we're very dissatisfied at the way you people across the pond are running things and the direction you're going. So I wouldn't even be a bit surprised, Daniel, if you stirred this pot long enough, this organization that's doing all of this, if you found a healthy dose of MI5 and MI6 people involved in the United Kingdom. I think this is what's got them spooked, because if they're reading the same tea leaves, they're thinking, oh my word, we've exposed ourselves now so much in the way we're handling, you know, Trump and all of this business. We've got to go for broke. And that's kind of scary, too, in and of itself, that they're reacting, like you say, out of fear.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, a good thing to point out here is that you tend to have a subtext in some of your books that is almost prophetic at times. And I mean, it's analytical in nature, but you seem to find the trends early. Mm-hmm. And now you did this Third Way book last year, which had a major section on Senator McCarthy and the close relationship that he had to Roy Cohn.
Yes.
And these things were going on in the 50s.
Right.
Now, in there, you showed how that period segued into the rise of the Kennedys and that whole era, and how the Kennedys were on a number of these committees that were trying to figure out the nature of the force that was taking control of different aspects of the government at the time, or making a pretty good guess at it.
Right.
And the connections with Roy Cohn and these committees and McCarthy, I find really fascinating now.
Oh,
because
yeah.
If we reflect on Cohn, and, you know, he was such a major player in that era, and those really deep connections are really showing through there. And for another 40 years, he went on to do this. Now, he was a political mentor to Trump and his lawyer.
Yes.
And that brings us to this kind of fascinating idea that you've raised, that we could be looking at the mafia and their deep state influence as the force behind the Trump candidacy.
I think that at least you have to entertain the possibility, for the reason that if you go back to the mafia's connections with the federal government, this goes back to World War II, mm-hmm. when Bill Donovan made the deal between the OSS and Lucky Luciano to use the mob connections inside fascist Italy to, you know, report on Italian movements and so on and so forth, what Mussolini's government was up to and so on. So there was a deep nexus that occurred between the mafia at that time and the American intelligence community. And that continues after the war. The problem here is, I think what Trump represents to a certain extent, you know, he's made his money in casinos. We know well the connection between the mafia and casinos, because casinos were used in large part to launder their money.
Right.
So I think what you're looking at with Trump, or at least you have to entertain the possibility, is even though the American mafia is involved in, you know, in the international drug trade and so on, they're involved in the casino industry and so on. What you're looking at with the mafia is nonetheless a group of people that, in spite of their criminal background, are patriotic.
Uh-huh.
You know, they do genuinely like this country. They want to defend it, again, using Lucky Luciano as the example here, you know, running his spy operation for the OSS from prison.
Right.
You know, how does this work? But anyway, if you're the mafia then, and you have taken a hit in your casinos from Obamacare and all the other things that have eradicated the middle class's discretionary spending, if you're taking that kind of hit and you're seeing the people behind it are these international globalists, well, what do? You back a candidate that wants to put an end to that, that says no to all of this globalism, open borders, TTP, and all of this stuff. But they can't do it alone. This is why I think it's very interesting about this scenario with all these leaks.
Yes.
Because by the same token, that the leaks themselves indicate that somebody has an intelligence background that knows how to go into these places, get their emails, and put them out so that everybody can ignore them in the mainstream media, as they've been doing or trying to do. So, yeah, I think Trump is perhaps, if you look at him and the way he has the way he has handled his campaign and the way he has handled his opponents, dropping the little zingers in that he has dropped in during the Republican primary, the business about 9/11, you know, just zinging Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
With statements that literally came right out of the 9/11 truth movement. And that they tried to tar him with that brush in response to this, and it didn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, Jeb Bush dropped like a rock after that comment. And then zinging Ted Cruz with the business about his father and JFK. And again, you know, days after this happens, Cruz drops out, his financial support withered, and he was out.
Absolutely.
So what that tells me is that there's somebody in the Trump campaign that is a liaison for all of this intelligence that he plops into at certain key timed moments, that he plops into his statements and speeches. And my only guess is it has to be coming either from the mafia or from the American intelligence community, and probably both.
Right.
So in other words, the way I'm looking at this election, Daniel, I'm looking at it as a prime example of what I've been calling for years factional infighting amongst, you know, the Mr. Global crowd.
Right.
And I've told people over and over again that they need to get out of their minds this idea that there's all one huge overarching conspiracy that one particular group is the master controller of, you know, be it the Zionists or the Freemasons or the bankers or what have you.
Right.
That what you're dealing with is a mafia. These people can all gather around their conference tables and smoke their cigars and sip their brandy and kiss each other's rings and anything else, you know, and plot world domination. But as they near the end game, the closer they get to their goal, the more the factional infighting is going to increase, because each faction wants to be the faction in charge. And that's what I think is going on. I think this election is the international globalists, the centralizers, the neocons are the Hillary people. And the people that say, no, we've tried your way, it's not working, let's go another way, let's try the decentralized approach, you know, and that's the faction behind Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think, in other words, what I'm saying is, I don't think the Donald Trump candidacy was just a lark that he got in his head one day. Oh, well, by the way, I'm going to run for president.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm tired of building casinos. No, this guy doesn't operate that way. I mean, come on. He's too smart for this.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's something else going on behind his candidacy that nobody has really looked at.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I'm sure it explains why the media is showing their real face here. Now, when we come back, we'll take a closer look at these factions that are battling. Last round of part one coming up here with Dr. Farrell. Stay with us.
Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Subscribe now and you'll have access to the complete audio archives to download or stream at your convenience. Receive advanced updates and discounts on Dark Journalist events. Enjoy exclusive subscriber-only content. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special summer discount available for just $39 for one full year. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
Sitting there filming, a little saucer came from, a saucer came flying over their heads, put down three little landing gear and landed right out on the dry lake bed. And they picked up their cameras and started over toward it, filming as they went. And when they got in fairly close to it, it lifted up, put the gear back in the wheel wells, tipped up, and took off at a great rate of speed.
Dark journalist will go there.
The deep state has a long history of being at war with the public state, but this year, with Trump versus Clinton, it is apparently at war with itself.
Hidden technology.
So in other words, the possibility exists that you have here a machine that is manipulating magnetic fields on a planetary scale that has nothing to do with particle physics.
The black budget.
But there's no such thing as getting away from the corruption, because it is now integrated into every economy in the globe.
Geoengineering.
I'm talking about right down to the DNA level. Imagine that you have now the microprocessors and sensors, along with everything else, into every human body.
For more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries, visit darkjournalist.com today. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph Farrell. Now, Dr. Farrell is the author of the popular Giza Death Star book series. His two new books this year are Hidden Finance Rogue Networks and Secret Sorcery, which is mostly about his investigation of the deeper context of 9/11, which we did a three-part series on at darkjournalist.com. And his latest one is Rotten to the Common Core, about the surveillance state getting into education, which is our next episode with him. Now, today we've been taking a more penetrating look at this unusual presidential election of 2016 and what's happening behind the scenes. Now, Joseph, we were getting sort of a good look at these different factions battling in this election. And the question is, are we seeing a split in the deep state?
I think, you know, it's factional infighting. What we're seeing with these two is factional infighting, just like what we saw with the Brexit vote. We're seeing it now in, you know, spreading in Europe. It's going to be very interesting, regardless of who wins. I don't think, personally, I think if Hillary wins, she's going to be one of the weakest presidents in American history. I mean, think John Tyler or Millard Fillmore. Here.
Definitely.
I think she's going to be one of the weakest presidents simply because she's so corrupt, so blackmailable. I predict within 2 weeks of her taking office, her administration is going to be so rejected because of this fact.
Mm-hmm.
She's too blackmailable by foreign powers, and you think corruption's been bad under Bush too and Obama? Just wait, folks. I really do, and because of that weak presidency, I think you're going to see the polarization in this country reach. It's going to reach pre-revolutionary levels, quite frankly.
Wow.
I really do. You know, the Princeton study last year said that, yeah, America's in a pre-revolutionary state. It's so badly polarized. I listened to Vice President Biden, and I'll tell you what, give you an example of what I mean by polarization here. I listened to a short speech by Vice President Biden. I forget where he was doing this. Just a couple of days ago, I think, and it was about a two and a half minute clip. And he was talking about communities. Well, the white community, you know, is going to be the minority, and that's not a bad thing. And there's the women's community and the black community and the Muslim community and the LGBT community and community. Okay, you know, everybody's in community.
Yeah.
But what I never heard him mention, when I think of community, I think of my neighborhood. I think of a place. What these people are talking about is a collective.
Right.
And when you make it all abstract, that is the old divide et impera, you know, divide and conquer method. And that's what he was doing. He was talking the language of divide and conquer. He wasn't talking about genuine communities here in this locale. And you listen to Trump in some of his speeches, and this is what he's doing. He's trying to locate a community sense with people. He's not talking in the glittering abstractions.
I see.
So that tells me, okay, he's been listening to a bunch of people or advisors that are telling him this globalist centralization, multinational corporations are going to run it all thing is not the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And now that he's put that meme out there, it's not going to disappear if he loses. It's only going to grow.
Right.
He's talking Vladimir Putin and Viktor Orban's language over in Europe. He's saying the same thing. And the way I view that, Daniel, that's not so much nationalism or populism as it is national sovereignty talk.
Right.
And that's what the globalists hate. They don't want that. They don't want national sovereignties. They don't want you and me to be free individuals and sovereign. And that's what he's tapping into. I think Hillary, on the other hand, represents that crowd. She certainly caters to it. And if what's coming out about the Clinton Foundation
all right.
now is any indicator, yeah, you know, she's not only catering to it, but in a certain sense, exposing that whole idea as nothing but a great big huge global cabal of racketeering, influence peddling, you know, it's a gang.
Definitely. It's like her first day in office would be like Nixon's last day in office, you know?
I know. It's just, yeah. Well, aptly said, you know, I'm not a crook, you know? Well, in Hillary's case, I am a crook and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, exactly. It's just incredible. Now, I want to go back to your Third Way book for a moment, because you've pointed out in there that these post-war influences of fascism and communism,
yes,
you know, they embedded themselves in the national security state, mm-hmm. into the political life of the nation, and they've sought to assert power again. And it seems now like the communist influence, as you just mentioned in Biden's weird speech about communities, that communist influence seemed to grow into that Obama-Biden-Clinton wing.
Oh yeah, it's always been more closely associated with the Democrats than with the Republicans. Which, you know, the opposite is true of the Republicans. You have that fascist, you know, what I call the Sullivan and Cromwell crowd.
Right.
Alan Dulles, John Foster, John McCloy, making all of their dirty deals with, you know, the Nazis, with Galen at the end of World War II. So, you know, the Republicans aren't innocent here, folks.
Exactly, but, yeah.
You know, what gets me, Daniel, talking about this election where things are so in your face, I mean, my word, we've got communists going, trying to show up and protest Trump rallies, and they're openly waving their communist flags. You know, this doesn't make the mainstream media, and they're throwing their support to Hillary. Well, what does that tell you? Yeah, the reason I put that in the Third Way book, these committees, as I said, I think when we did that interview, was the way I'm looking at it, Daniel, I don't think anybody has sat down to do a comprehensive history of why in the world are we having all of these congressional investigations, Republican and Democrat, after World War II, dealing with shadowy influences in the federal government, be it McCarthy and his communists or Kefauver and the Mafia, or the Reese Committee with the foundations, which we'll probably get into today with the Common Core book. Mm-hmm. There's all these committees.
Oh, yes.
And no one has done a history of what really is going on here. Why do we have all of these committees popping up, investigating these little things? And why has no one attempted to connect the dots between them? So what I suspect, as you've alluded to in your question, is that there may have been a perception that the two greatest national security threats that this country has faced in the last century, communism and fascism, were working behind the scenes during that era in conjunction with their American deep state high finance backers in both camps to orchestrate and maneuver themselves into positions of power and at the same time expose their opposite numbers.
Right.
Because you, for example, you dig into McCarthy, Senator McCarthy, in Wisconsin, one of his big backers, financial backers, was this Wisconsin millionaire with openly pro-fascist sympathies. So in other words, go get them, Joe. Go get those commies, you know. You had this working, and clearly he's getting intelligence from somewhere.
Yes.
In his investigative committees. So the thing I'm suggesting is, yeah, I think these two factions are hidden. They're in the woodwork, so to speak, of the federal government, and they're trying to take out their opposite number. And lo and behold, here we are now in this election, and we see something similar happening.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a Nazi collaborator in Darth Soros supporting his young apprentice, the Sith Lord Hillary,
right.
You know, and at the same time, she has all of these murky connections with the Chinese and so on and so forth. And then we've got the other pissed off part of the American deep state represented Donald Trump. You know, so I'm like, it's the 50s.
Yeah, right. I think you can draw a line from there.
Yeah, you can draw lines here.
Definitely, yeah. Now, one thing you've identified that's interesting is if that American deep state intelligence network that was tied in with the mafia and the mafia itself is behind Trump's rise, then one of the key things could be the serious loss of revenue, you know, at casinos for other activities. Obamacare and its premiums have eaten away at the disposable income of ordinary Americans. That's a fact.
Yes.
So, you know, yes. Here's this element of the mafia and the deep state saying, hey, you and the international corporations cut us out of the pie. Now you're going to have to pay for that.
Right. It's omerta.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, come on, Roy Cohn.
Right.
This guy, I mean, you know, let's be honest here. This guy was a piece of work.
Yeah.
You know, he had his fingers into just about every pie. Mafia related that you can think of. And let's be honest here. Yeah, Donald Trump's a businessman. He's a shrewd businessman. He's made billions of dollars. He's built his buildings and so on. Well, come on. You can't build a building in New York City without greasing a few palms in the unions with the mob, you know, making the right donations to the right city council members and so on. You know, it just can't be done.
Right.
So he knows how this game is played. He's got those contacts. You know, Roy Cohn is probably just the surface part of it, the most visible part of it. But, you know, he can't be in that business. He cannot be in the casino business and not know who the players are.
Right.
So, yeah, I do think that Trump, he's not getting all of this intelligence on his own. I just don't see that. And even with his connection to Roger Stone,
mm-hmm.
You know, Stone would be the kind of man that would know who to talk to in the NSA or the CIA or the FBI to find out things. So, yeah, I think Trump is a pissed off deep state faction candidate.
I really think it makes a lot of sense. And we'll go further into the geopolitical reasons for this and how interesting aspects of the military are joining his team while others are divided. What's behind that? Now, in part two, we're going to get into all this and we'll tie in how the surveillance state is now in the middle of a takeover of the education system and how all this ties together. So subscribers to darkjournalist.com will get that episode next week, and it's really the time to subscribe with the discount ending soon. So do it now, and that helps the program. Joseph, thank you. Amazing stuff today. And stay right there. Let's drink some more coffee, and we'll do part two right now.
Okay, good.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode on Deep State Election 2016 with Dr. Joseph Farrell. You can find more special reports, deep interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.